What's up, you beauties? Welcome to High and Wide Radio, episode 37, season 4. My name is Jim Microphone, and I'm joined by the one and only Jack Smith. Before we get to the topics of the episode, allow me to remind you, if you're not listening live, please make sure to subscribe, follow, and listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Spreaker. And if you've been watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit the subscribe button there. We do appreciate all the subscriptions. Let's also shout out the affiliate sites, fullpresscoverage.com and bellyupsports.com. While you're listening to the episode, check out our site, hwhockey.net, where you can now find the Pod Street Bully podcast and the Time High Skates podcast. And hopefully, you just finished watching the latest episode of HW at Night with Dave Leonard, featuring the one and only, the voice of the Flyers, Mr. Jim Jackson. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that one. And thanks for tuning in and hanging out with us now. So, Jack, let's dive into our topics. We took a week off to kind of let the dust settle on all the things happening in the last week. Obviously, there's big news. Islanders fired their coach. Flyers getting a top five pick in the lottery draft. But they weren't the biggest story, of course, there. So let's dive into that first. Flyers picking fifth overall in the 2022 NHL draft in Montreal. Thoughts?
Well, apparently it was the most likely scenario, according to all the math involved, which is a little strange. I guess the way they do it, they do a lottery, which I'm not against. But it is a little weird that you're the fourth ranked team, but you have the highest odds of dropping down. It wasn't just for the Flyers. It's pretty much for everybody. I guess that's how it goes with the first overall pick. Everybody gets a nudge down, except for those New Jersey Devils, who, again, I think it was you who said the stat. They or the Eastern, the Metro or the Devils or both have just been ridiculously cornering the market on like the top two picks, like especially the Devils. The Devils really come to mind. I know we're not big to, you know, we shouldn't really talk. We had the second overall pick and now here we are fifth, but the Devils have drafted two now, and they've been up there plenty of times. It is crazy. And they leapfrogged a bunch of teams, including the Flyers, to get there. Ultimately, with the way this draft has gone out, if we weren't getting the first overall pick, which I'm not really killing myself for, at least not yet. I want to do more research. I'm starting to dig into that. We're going to get a good player. It's really hard to screw up, so I wasn't going to cry about dropping a spot. I think I was more upset with the Devils jumping to the top two because I really – thanks to certain people in our circle, I'm starting to like these guys at the top, one of them being Cooley, and I'm going to do more research, but he's probably going to wind up being a Devil, which is just fantastic.
So I'm trying to find that tweet because the Metro teams, I think it was, they have seven top two picks in the last six NHL drafts. The Rangers, of course, drafted Lafreniere first overall. They have Kako Kapo, and then you have the New Jersey Devils. Jack Hughes went first overall. He went first overall, yeah. And then they have Nico Hischier went first overall. And now they have the second overall pick. And they finished sixth to last in the NHL. So I think this season might be a little bit more surprising than others. Then, of course, what is that? Five between the two teams right there. Then you have Svechnikov for Carolina. You have Patrick for the Flyers, who's obviously the worst of the bunch.
Oh, easily.
And I think that's seven guys. So, yeah, seven top two picks in the last six NHL drafts for the Metro Division. And the Flyers got stuck with Nolan Patrick. So there you go. we are going to have one of our draft or our prospect gurus, Paul Pollock, coming on in a future show, as you mentioned, Jack. But, you know, let's say, obviously, it sounds like most likely the first overall pick is going to be Shane, right? And I say that sort of hesitantly because of what's come out the last day or so about Shane Wright. Even in our group chat, you know, guys they're not really sold on Shane Wright. But as of now, he's the consensus first overall. So let's say he's number one. And then from two to five or two to six, it's kind of a crapshoot, right?
From what I gather now, and, you know, in Nolan Patrick's draft year, he was the clear-cut number one pick for a long time. And there are late risers, and Nico Hischier definitely jumped him to the Devils, to our chagrin, I should say. Devils definitely made the right decision there. It seems like Wright's going to be the pick. I think we're too close to the draft for it to really switch like that. You never know. They can come out and surprise you. Montreal, they got to make a good pick. You know what I mean? They really can't. You can't afford to get too cute with the first overall pick of the draft. So if there, you have a clear-cut favorite, I think you got to go with them. And I think there is right now. When's the last time somebody traded down from one? I would be shocked. And then I'm hearing a lot of Cooley at two. But it depends on where you read and who you talk to after that. Like, I've had Flyers are easily getting one of the top defensemen in some readings at five, which makes a lot of sense and very Fletcher-esque. It is a need, it won't lie. But then I've seen other where they're the top two are off the board by the time we draft. So it's a crapshoot, like you said. I can't wait. It's going to be fun. It's going to be quick. This draft party is going to be nothing like the Cole Caulfield year, or I should say the Cam York year, unless we trade back again. But I really feel that they can't screw this up unless they go completely off the board. And the only person I feel confident doing that is C.V. Yzerman, who does not work for the Flyers.
No, he does not. At least not as far as we know. So I know I catch crap for this, but I'm partially serious. And a lot of it's because I haven't watched any of these players. Like in the past, like we've looked up players, we've watched players, we've done our research, whatnot. We've got excited for the draft. This year I'm not. And it's not just because of the players. Jack, like, I think you know where I stand by now, and a lot of the listeners know that too. I'm just not excited to draft players anymore, you know? Whether that's from Ron Hextall or, you know what it is, it's just the amount of time waiting for them to come up and play. And then when they finally do come up, it's like, well, they need to be in the league another 2 to 3 years before they really get it. And it's like, so now we got to wait 6 years to see this kid actually put it together. So I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just over it. And then when it's, you consider the quality of the draft this season, it's like, you know what? So here's the thing too. New Jersey, before they obviously got bumped up to two, they came out and said the sixth, if they were to pick sixth, the pick is on the table. It's available. They want to move it. They want to get NHL talent. Ottawa, same thing. They're picking seventh overall. They want a player where they can use now, which I think is interesting because they're not a very good hockey team. Neither are the Devils. So it's like, okay, well, why don't these bad teams want young NHL talent? Top 10 picks. Why do they want to move them? And it's like, you know, after five or six, maybe it's kind of like, you know, we would get better talent moving the pick. And it's like, Chuck, maybe you should consider this moving the pick, you know?
I definitely think that's half true. I think the other part of that with Ottawa and New Jersey is they've been drafting at the top for so long. They just have so much stocked talent that they're, you know, it's time to add to the team. Look, the Devils last offseason, they added Dougie Hamilton. Mm-hmm. They're not doing that if they're still looking forward to drafting at the top of the draft. Obviously, things didn't exactly go their way. Goaltending was shaky for them. Hamilton got hurt. Hughes was looking good, then he got hurt. But they got other guys, I believe. I always confuse some of these players. It's Dawson Mercer, correct? Mm-hmm. He's with New Jersey. He was showing – he was looking like they got a nice draft pick, and they also got Sanderson coming up, a defenseman who went right around where Jamie Drysdale went last, I think 2 years ago. You know, so they're gonna have all these guys coming up. Why add another one? And they drafted more than that too. There's more in the cupboard coming.
Sure.
They've added to the NHL roster now. They're ready to win. They're ready to compete now. They've done enough of the drafting at the top of the draft. This is much like the Flyers, although less expectations. A failed year. They just couldn't put it together yet. Hughes is taking a little bit longer, but there's still something there. So instead of trying to just do more of the same, it's like, let's go for it now. Let's move a pick. There's not the 2023 draft, which is like completely loaded, allegedly. You know, let's see what we can do. And same with Ottawa. Ottawa's been drafting at the top of the draft as well. You know, and they got Brady Tkachuk that way, among other players. Of course, I can't think of it at the top of my head. But they got plenty of guys up there. They've been building, and they want to start winning too. They got to add some veteran talent to these young studs, which ideally was what you'd think the Flyers would have done if they actually did an actual rebuild. But that's neither here nor there. I think it's a combination of it's not one of those drafts. I think they're a little bit out of like the top tier drafting at 6 and 7. I still think they can get a solid player, but who's to say? And I think they're just flat out ready to win now. They want to add to the current team they had, not the future. Both, especially in Ottawa's case, that GM's been there quite a while. Like, he's got to start winning.
They just fired him, actually.
Oh, they did. I just saw him at the lottery. Oh, geez. Never mind, I guess that's it.
So I don't know if that's I mean, what was Pierre Maguire's role? Wasn't he GM?
No, he was no. He was just like hockey operations or something.
Okay.
No, what the hell's his name?
I see his face, but I can't remember.
I see it too. I saw him at the lottery. That's why I was like, there's no way it would have been this week. But yeah. No, it wasn't Maguire.
They shit canned Maguire right before the draft.
Shocking. Yeah, he's probably already knocking on Pittsburgh's door trying to get – he'll be the janitor if he works with Penguins. And he just loves the Penguins.
Well, speaking of Pittsburgh, let's bring this up real quick. So there was a quick tweet about Ron Hextall. So the main part of the tweet was Sidney Crosby being upset that Ron Hextall seemingly lowballed Chris Letang and Evgeny Malkin. So I don't know how true this is. The tweet is from Andrew Filipponi. So apparently Ron Hextall offered 2 3-year deals, one apiece, worth $15 million. So $5 million a year for Letang and Malkin. And apparently the lowball offers did not sit well with Sidney Crosby. Ron's up to his old tricks. So he can redeem himself if he blows this Pittsburgh team up, right? If he blows it to smithereens and they just suck for however long, right?
That would be fantastic. I mean, I love that Ron has still yet to win the first round of the playoffs, which has also been pointed out. And I love that he's already causing dismay in Pittsburgh. To his credit, I don't know how he's going to sign both these guys. Chris Sid could be all upset all he wants, but it's either one or none. Yeah, I mean, now the deal is a low ball, let's be real. But there's no way both of these guys are coming back. There's just no way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to trade him? Well, no, you can't. They give the rights. They could trade the rights before the draft. That's about it. You know, I don't know. I'd be shocked. I lean to them re-signing Malkin and Letang, testing the waters. But if both of them left, that would be great.
Yeah, so I'm looking at cap friendly here now. They're both 35 years old. Malkin, his cap hit at least was $9.5 million for this past season. Chris Letang, his cap hit was $7.25 million. So it's, they're 35 years old. What do these guys think they're going to get, really? You know, if you're making five, I mean, so they're about Claude Giroux's age. What were we thinking Claude Giroux was going to get if he re-signed here? Do you remember?
Between, I think five was like on the lower end, maybe six. Yeah. Six. It depends on the years, though. That's the tough part. Three years is, at their age, is decent. But considering like Malkin's like close to a generational player, if not, depending on who you speak to. And Letang, I had him in fantasy. He was still putting up the numbers, again, playing with that squad. You just know if they hit the open market, somebody's going to pay them something. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. What that would – God, can you imagine if Seattle, like, just swept in? Like, what that would do for their ticket sales? Like, you know what I mean? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense team-building-wise, but, yeah, I just – they're going to get on the open market. Somebody will definitely pay up, especially for a puck-moving defenseman like Letang. God knows what – a guy like Malkin can bring to a young group, like Ottawa or something, like somebody. I don't know. It depends on the years and whatnot. But at the same time, if I'm a Hextall talking to Crosby, those teams have that cap space. Like, we don't. We're capped out. We are going for it. This is it. If you want both these guys back, I got to play hardball here. So, I mean, is it a low ball? Definitely. I don't know what that number is, what the perfect number is. When you hear it, you're kind of like, ooh. But, knowing what these guys have meant for the franchise, and Sid can be upset all he wants, but at the end of the day, it's a business, you know? So I'll withhold judgment until I see what actually gets done, but it's not off to a good start, at least team building wise.
I'm looking at average annual value here, and Malkin has made, obviously hasn't made as much money overall, but his average annual value was 800,000 higher than Crosby. So Crosby's making 8.7 a year, but he's signed till 24, 25. Malkin was making 9.5. At least that's his average annual value for the cap. So I thought that was interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Malkin's worth more than 5 million. He was a point per game player, but he doesn't look like the same. Again, he's 35 years old. What's he going to look like when he's 36, 37, 38? Letang had a very good season. But again, you can't really trust the age, I guess. Hextall's going to start turning that roster over, I'm pretty sure. They got a couple UFAs here. Brian Rust is 30 years old. He's not a kid anymore. Who else did I just see? Oh, Evan Rodriguez, I guess, is the guy they want to sign, 28.
He's not any more money than what he made. Wasn't he, like, league minimum or close to it?
Yeah, he was making a million. They traded for Ricard Raquel, who's a UFA. He's 29. They're an old team, man. They don't have anybody really. They don't have anybody under 26 years old. Oh, they have one player under 26 as a forward, and one player under 26 as a defenseman. It was Drew O'Connor. Yeah, so they're an older team. Oh, I'm sorry, Kapanen's 25 too. Kasperi Kapanen, who's an RFA. I don't think they're too fond of him up over there, by the way, which is weird. So yeah, there could be some turnover in Pittsburgh for sure, and that's going to be something. I'm sure a lot of teams are going to keep an eye on.
I want to see the direction they go. I do. Those guys are still good. 3 million for 3 years. I expect them to get more, but they are injury prone too, especially Malkin at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it will be interesting. I wonder if Malkin just ends up going to the KHL. You think he stays in the NHL?
Well, with everything going on with Rush right now, I don't know. If there's money to be made, it's his legacy. It depends. Everybody's different, you know?
It's true.
I feel like he'd hit free agency before he'd do that. Mm-hmm. I feel like a team would really pony up just to bring him in. You know what I mean? We got this young group here. We'll pay it 4 years, however much money. Because they go from 9.25 or 9.5 to 5 mil. That's like a, I won't say slap in the face, but that's a significant drop for only 3 years.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, Drew, we didn't know the years, but he was only dropping like $2-2.5 million in our minds. Who knows what they were actually, if we went that route, what he was going to get. We'll see what he gets too. But like, you know, he's the same age as these guys, and he's talking about going to Ottawa. Why couldn't Malkin do something similar? You know, we know that Drew's probably going to get more than just a flat 5 mil. So it's tough. I never know how to judge these waters. I just don't know. And I feel like there is no set anything. It just depends on how the market sets itself. And it's usually that first signing that kind of, you know, the dominoes, we call it, kind of goes from there. I'm sure they have an idea, but I think, Ekstall shooting from the hip here, and it's off to.
I think he knows what he's doing. He's low balling. You know what they do. He doesn't really want them back. That's why.
Okay, now that I
back, you send the low ball offer, and then you make it look like the player's disgruntled and this and that, and the GM's a saint, whatever. But Crosby coming out, and not that he's dissing his GM, but say, you know, coming out and it comes out that the captain's not happy about the low ball offers. That doesn't make the GM look good, especially Hextall. Like Crosby is a saint over there.
Especially when it's his first like real test as GM, you know. And so, Berkey's there to make sure he doesn't break things down until Crosby's out.
I love that, yeah.
I mean, he can't be farting around, but what you said about lowballing him and just hoping that they can't come to an agreement, that's something I used to do in NHL all the time. Like, I know this guy's overall is going to dip after like 1 year. So I'm like, maybe I'll give myself an excuse to move on.
You don't want to be the bad guy. It's the player's fault.
And that's not even real.
Yeah. Oh, shit. All right. Let's move on to another Metro Division team here. So the New York Islanders last week fired head coach Barry Trotz. Today they made the announcement that they promoted assistant coach Lane Lambert to head coach. And so let's talk about Barry Trotz. So he's been pretty much a free agent coach for about a week now. He had 1 year left on his deal. I think he was making, I want to say he was making $5 million in Long Island. Got to double check that. But Barry Trotz is available. More coaches are getting fired now as the offseason and playoffs roll on. Jack, your thoughts on Barry Trotz?
Why? I mean, come on. You feel like the voice was lost in that locker room? There were some mixed messages coming out from Lou, if you ask me. I felt the locker room needed a new voice, but at the same time, he said, this was my decision and my decision alone. So it's like, was it? And also, panic button early. This guy took you to back-to-back Eastern Conference Finals, and one of which you pushed that Lightning team to Game 7. Lost by one measly goal, and that Lightning team should have been a non-salary cap 90s team with what they did with Kucherov and whatnot. That team was stacked, and they still almost beat them. You know, they really were that close to a cup. He turned that franchise around who really hasn't been – they went to the playoffs once or twice with Tavares. But before that, maybe not since the 80s, you know, and when they brought in Trotz, they had just lost John Tavares. Everybody had them at the bottom of the league, and they just freaked out and were like the team nobody wants to play in the playoffs, especially the Flyers. But like we always say that, matchups is the thing. It is, but like nobody matched up good against the Islanders. Nobody wanted to play them. The only thing I'll say is his style of play is that they're a hard team to play against, but to be that hard team, it takes a lot on you as a player, I guess. And I guess that's part of maybe why they moved on. I don't understand. He was great with Washington. He left there having just won the cup, and he was with Nashville a very, very long time. It was a lot of really good players came out of Nashville while he was there. Some still there, some have moved on. And he was, I think that was his longest tenure team. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I don't understand after 4 years and all the success the Islanders have seen, why he pulled the, after one bad year. When they remember, they got off to a rough start. They had a lot of injuries and there was COVID issues.
Like they played like 13, 15 straight games on the road, the longest road trip in NHL history.
They had a lot of issues, and you know, it's hard to get things going. And sometimes things can snowball. And it just felt, I don't know. I feel like something else had to have gone down because it's just too strange. Like too many. If Hakstol could keep his job for what, 4.5 years and Trotz gets canned. Like what? Like you just see the different mindset and different GMs. And that was more of a shot against the Flyers for hanging on to something that clearly wasn't working versus a guy who's proven, has a cup, has brought your franchise from crap to actual relevance, you know, and they have one down year and he cans him. It's like, Jesus Christ, if Fletcher isn't all over him, and I'm sorry if I'm transitioning now, but I'm just going to get it out of the way because we all feel the same way. We were told blank check. I understand that might've been just for players, but it shouldn't matter. The blank check, this doesn't go against the cap. Bring in the best possible coach. Or if they're not even discussing him, the city will riot. Like, and it looks like he's going to go to Vegas. It's all the speculation now that DeBoer's out. It makes sense. They're a ready-made team to go for it. It's Vegas. It's new. They know all they do is win pretty much out there. I think it's the only year they didn't make the playoffs was this year since the team's been brought into the league. It's got Trotz written all over it. Some structure, some championship caliber. I mean, he's also the guy who beat them in the cup. I mean, Flyers should – it should not be a finance. It should come down to Trotz's choice. If they don't – I don't care what they're paying AV. They have so much work they have to do with this fan base. Money should not be an issue. They got it. The print – Comcast is printing it. They're absolutely printing it. I don't want to hear any crybaby crap about money and we're still paying a coach. Not that we would, but if that speculation comes out, that is some serious horseshit. Serious horseshit. They should be – the number one, two, or three teams, I think Detroit's definitely sniffing around. And the only reason that we don't get picked better be because we have no clout right now. We're a joke right now. And I understand that if I'm Trotz. But finance, we should be number one. We should be offering the most money, hands down.
I'm wondering if – so Matt Barzal, right, the star in Long Island. This is a very good offensive player, very good hockey player, exciting to watch. I mean, we watched him in the playoffs a couple years back. Clearly was on another level than a lot of the guys, especially players on the Flyers. So his rookie season, 85 points in 82 games. Barry Trotz was not the head coach back then. Trotz took over in 2018-19. Since Trotz took over, Matt Barzal has not scored over 62 points. 62, 60, 45, and 59 points in the 4 years that Barry Trotz was there. Barzal's contract is up next season. I think he's making $7 million a year. I'm speculating on my part because I think somebody quoted Barzal saying, you know, he was not going to look to play somewhere else if Trotz was still the coach. I think that's BS. I think maybe there were some rumblings that Barzal was going to look to play somewhere else if Trotz was still the coach because he's an offensive player. He's 24 years old. Let's face it. I mean, this is a career. It's a job for these players, right? And you want to get paid, right? Because so who knows how long you're going to be playing for. $7 million is a lot of money. But if you look at Barzal's numbers, 60 points. If you're making $7 million a year and scoring 60 points a season, how are you getting a raise off that, right? So I think there's something going on behind the scenes that we didn't see or that we're not hearing about because I don't think – Lamorello is that kind of guy who's going to leak stuff like that, like the Flyers do about ex-coaches or whatever.
No.
But I think there's something going on there. And I think when he said they needed a new voice, I think that's what it was. So Lambert, I don't know what happened up there, but I think there was maybe a couple games where Trotz wasn't the head coach. And Lambert kind of filled in as interim.
I think he had COVID at some point or something.
Yeah. And from what I read, Lamorello really, really enjoyed Lambert's time as the head coach. So I think, you know, with that, it's like, hey, this is a new guy, new voice in the room. I don't know what kind of system or what kind of coach Lambert is, but I'll be interested to see if they play a more offensive style next season to kind of cater to Barzal, because they have defensive players. If you have defensive players, they're going to play good defensive hockey. If you implement a more offensive system, I'd be interested to see how that turns out.
It's an interesting thought, and I understand it, and I've heard a little bit of that chatter before. First thing I'll say is Lou is like as close to the chest of a GM as you can get. He's always been that way. Lambert's been with Trot since, I want to say, Nashville, so I'd be surprised if his system is that much different, which goes into the Barzal thing. Like, if that's the case, why hire Lambert? Now, I did hear that Lambert, if he didn't get the head coaching job with the Islanders, he certainly would have got it somewhere else, if not this year, then in the very near future. He's highly regarded. But when I look at, like, Barzal, I mean, $7 million isn't chump change. And I know they want to get a raise and whatnot. But when I look at what, like, put that team into the Eastern Conference Finals in back-to-back years, and probably if they played a little bit of a lesser, non-ridiculous team, they could have been in the finals and they could have even won. It was Trotz well before Barzal, you know. So that's for Lou, who's been around forever, and just knows, like, it's not like he's picking Brodeur here over Trotz. Like, it's just, I could see that being possible, but it just feels very not Lou Lamorello for me. Maybe it's part of it. Maybe it's been discussed, but again, he was with Washington and. You know, I think all those guys weren't too stifled by his coaching and whatnot. I mean, I don't know what Ovechkin's stats or whatnot, but he finally got him a cup. Mm-hmm. Wilson had a hell of a year, got him paid, you know, and Kuznets off, and Backstrom was Backstrom, and Carlson was Carlson. You know, I don't know what's true and what's not. I just know that at the end of the day, the guy wins. He wins everywhere he goes, you know, and I think turning the Islanders around was huge. That was, what a feather in the cap, because they have been horrible for so long. So, I mean, yeah, is it possible? Sure. I would be surprised if Lou went that direction. Having that information in front of him and choosing to do what he did, I would be surprised.
So the next question is Barry Trotz the golden goose for the Philadelphia Flyers? Is he the guy that they can bring in and – you know, without even talking about specific roster changes and whatnot, if he comes in and the Flyers, let's just say, don't do anything to the roster, are they a playoff team next year?
Oh, jeez. That's a very unfair question. I don't know if anybody can come in here. I don't think, Scotty Bowman in his prime could come in here and just turn this roster around. To run it back? Oh, I don't know, man. They got a lot of issues. They got a lot of crybabies. They got a lot of mismatches. And I don't know if he's that good. I don't think anybody's that good. I do think he's part of it would be a massive piece of the puzzle. Like, because if you bring him in and certain guys just don't get the message, then those guys are gone. Because come on. Like, well, then what coach could you bring in at that point? This guy has all the clout in the world. Recent success. We don't have to reach back until when AV took the Rangers to the Cup. And he didn't win. Trotz won. He got it done. He's been successful everywhere he goes. If he were to come in and they still were, you know, whiny, then you got to move on from those guys, no matter who it is. You know, I mean, then it's a culture thing with your locker room, not your head coach. So I think, yeah, if they don't get him, it's not the end of the world. But – why wouldn't you? I don't understand why you wouldn't go for it. And because you know, if things still aren't working, it's the players. And I'm already on that track to begin with, but it's the players. Could he turn this, what we had last year, into a playoff? Maybe if Ellis comes back and plays a full season, which is completely up in the air. But I do think put in that situation with the injuries and the tools and whatnot, I think he would find a way to make us very competitive. And there would be accountability, and I don't think we'd be getting blown out. We might not be a playoff team, I don't know, but we wouldn't be getting embarrassed and blown out and whatnot. And I think he would do wonders for Carter Hart as well.
That's a good point there at the end with Carter Hart. I think you're right about that. so it's interesting. At the beginning, when we first heard Trotz was available, I was, yeah, let's get Barry Trotz. Why wouldn't we want the best coach? Arguably one of the best coaches in the NHL, if not the best. But after thinking about it a little bit, if the Flyers are going to make one major move, if they're going to either hire a coach, let's just say for the sake of argument, if they're either going to hire a coach or a star player, what would you rather have?
For the sake of argument, they need the star player. They're just deprived of real talent, like actual talent. They need a star player. This league is run by star players. You saw what these guys did. Like, who scored the overtime goals in game sevens? Star players.
Johnny G.
I mean, even McDavid stepped it up in game. I know that wasn't overtime, but he clearly stepped it up. Like, you know, he finally put getting through. And this league is star players. Now, it might not be all elite players, you know, Toronto, hey, you know, but like it's star players. Like they're running the league. Like it's we have none of that. You see like the top guys on other teams, they have like two or three of them sometimes. We have none. We have really none when you think of star player. Just because you say a guy, oh, he's our best player, that doesn't make him a star. He's just our best player on this goofy team. And ultimately that's what we need. So to answer your question, star player. However, there is no cap when it comes to coaches.
So here's the thing too. What about this team would attract a top coach? Why, like after what the Flyers had with Alain Vigneault, who was considered a top coach, if you're Barry Trotz, if you're Peter DeBoer, if you're Paul Maurice, if you're Rick Tocchet, if you're John Tortorella, what about this roster makes you say, yeah, I want to coach that team. I want to coach these guys.
Besides money?
I want to be. Well, yeah, sure, money's a huge thing. But, like, you know, if you're one of these good coaches, like a lot of teams are going to be shelling money at you. Teams who, like Detroit, for example, they're going to be really good. I don't know how good they're going to be in the short amount of time that a lot of people think they're going to be. But at least they have a plan. Like if you're a coach coming in there, you can see what they're doing, right? You've seen what they've done. They've drafted. They've done this. They've done that. They have guys like Seider, Raymond, Larkin, if he's still around, Bertuzzi, if he's still around. You see, they have something in place, right? So if you're a coach, you know what you're walking into, right? It's not necessarily a mess. If you're looking at the Flyers, you're kind of like, what's going on here? You know, they mismatched the roster up together. You know what? Chuck's drafting okay. I'm not upset about his drafting. But if you look at the roster, it's like, well, their two best players didn't play all season long. If they're out again, what am I working with? Are they going to go out and get depth? There's a lot of questions, right? I guess is the point. So I guess what I'm saying is there are other more attractive teams that can still pay the same amount of money as the Flyers have. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, and it is a concern. If I'm trying to sell the Flyers to a guy like Trotz, you're going to be the name guy here. You already have a cup. You want to talk about legacy now? You're the guy who got Philly one, turned the ship around with all the money. This isn't just one thing by itself. Like this is I think they're egomaniacs, and I think being the guy who did that would just propel them further up the ladder of head coaches. Like, you know, just if they get like, okay, say, Trotz just goes to Vegas and does whatever, you know, it's like, yeah, he friggin' stacked roster. Like, yeah, it makes sense. He wants to win. He went to the best possible team available. What a beautiful landing spot, you know, good, great. He's already got a cup, or he could go to Philly, say, he's got to like certain things here. And we do have players, you know, and he does know that the team will spend, you know, I don't know how much he knows about the team, but they'll spend to win. He knows that much. And he can probably mold it completely however the hell he wants, because we're such a dumpster fire here. It'd be his thing. Yeah, I mean, you don't know how egotistical some of these owners can be. Maybe the guy in Vegas wants his handprint on everything, you know, and it could be something. There's a lot of why'd he get fired? You know, like there's these behind the scenes conversations that happen. Look at his exodus in Washington. He had a riff with the friggin' GM. What is that about? Mm-hmm. You know, the team, it's just these guys, their egos get in the way a lot. And I do think that if you put him in a situation where he runs the ship, and like a Chip Kelly situation with the Flyers instead, that could, I think he would love that. You know, he completely has full control like that. I mean, obviously he can't get the players, but he have a hell of a say, and he knows that they'd spend and he get a shitload of money. I feel like I'm grasping at straws, but I don't.
It does kind of seem that way, but I'm just letting you know here.
I know. I'm like, I'm looking at you. I'm like, oh man, I'm losing Jim. I don't know how else you sell this team. I do know how these coaches are. And if he didn't get one yet and he's getting older, I don't think we're even on the map. But he's got one already. I could see that being a thing. At least that's how I would sell it. And I don't think it's that crazy. Now, do I think we get him? No, of course not. but I just do think that if you take a lot of these factors and combine them and lay it out to him like that, I could see him, you know, considering it.
So here, and I, before I get to what I kind of think they're going to go for, and let's get into some of these other names real quick. So Peter DeBoer became available today. Vegas let him go. They missed the playoffs, obviously, with arguably their best roster since they came into the league. You know, I think they're like $20 million over the cap or something like that.
Yeah,
they have guys like on IR and whatnot. So they let DeBoer go. You think that was a smart move by them?
I don't know.
43-31 this year.
But that's just Vegas. They let go Gallant. Guy took them to game five of the Stanley Cup in their inaugural year. They fired him after year three. And they made the playoffs every single year.
Yeah,
like,
weird.
They have different standards than we do here. Like, they're just like, we need to win always, you know, and missing the playoffs with a roster like Pacioretty, Stone, Eichel, you know, it just doesn't fly. If they go and get a guy like Trotz, then yeah, it does make sense. I just, whether it makes sense or not, I can't, until I see what they do, it's hard to answer. I just know that they have standards and the standards are high. And they just don't – it's like Schneider back in the day, man. Like, they're just like, no, this isn't good enough. We don't miss the playoffs. It's respectable.
I feel like that's going to start to bite them in the ass eventually.
Oh, sure. Certainly could.
You know, because I feel like it's not a team – they haven't been around long enough to be treating guys like this, in my opinion. And I get they're, you know, they're running like a business. They're a cash cow. They sell out every game. They have a show for a hockey game, whatever. But it's like, you know, what they did to Fleury, a little disrespectful, gave him a black eye. What they did to Gallant looked a little bit questionable, but it's like, all right, they're first head coach. I get it, whatever. But they bring in DeBoer, like midseason, back in 2019-20. The guy's there for 2.5 years. This was his first full season there. So in 2019-20, DeBoer was canned by San Jose after 33 games. Coached 22 games with Vegas, went 15-5-2, and they lost, I think, in the conference finals. 2021, obviously, was a shortened season. Coached 56 games. They went 40-14, and they lost once again in the conference finals. His first full season, they went 43-31-8, missed the playoffs. And then this team was beat up by injuries, right? They were missing players left and right all season long. Kind of like the Flyers, but you know, they were also getting guys back. Barely missed the playoffs, and they canned DeBoer. So I don't think there has to be some other things going on there that we don't know about, being on the East Coast. We're not in that market, but it doesn't really make a lot of sense to can a guy for one bad year when it's kind of the GM's fault for jacking up that roster a little bit, isn't it?
I think he might be on the hot seat soon too. I mean, they went all out to get Eichel, and they needed that center depth as well. And it's just maybe that's the other thing. He played what, the last third of the season,
mm-hmm.
like, and how much of that was Eichel, like real Eichel? You know, it's hard to say. You know, so I don't think anybody should have gotten fired.
Yeah.
If anything, the GMs, you know, needs to be under a microscope, because you're right. They had the injuries actually helped them. I think they lost Martinez for a while.
And he's a critical part of that. He's a very good defenseman, Alec Martinez.
Absolutely critical part. That's how I read it too. It was like the injuries helped them get under the cap, but the guys they lost to injury were important to the roster. So, you know, yeah, it does seem like the GM, but again, typically GMs get two head coaches. sometimes three if there's a guy already there that they decide to keep. But they tend to get make their first hire. They roll with that. If it doesn't work out, they usually get one more. And I'm assuming because they're the – I think their GM was the, originally the GM of the Washington Capitals back in the day. And he, like, moved into a president role, and this other guy took over. So he might have – this might be his last coach. So maybe he felt – maybe they know more stuff than we do, too. Maybe he knew that there was a chance a guy like Trotz was going to become available. And, you know, seeing how things went, he's like, this might be my last coach because of the salary cap and because I went for Eichel and we didn't make the playoffs. I might have to, you know, really go for it. And maybe he made a decision to go get the – big free agent coach, and we'll ultimately see what they do. But maybe it was motivated by something more about his job than it was anything else. And that seeing the issues they have in the cap makes a lot of sense.
Sure. Yeah. And that makes sense. And hey, all signs could point to that, you know, because why would you let a coach like DeBoer go, who, as we mentioned earlier, they fired Gallant to get DeBoer. And now they're, it looks like they could be letting DeBoer go to get to Barry Trotz. So, we'll see what happens. There's a lot of guys out there, a lot of names available. I can't remember an offseason, honestly, where there's been this many, you know, well-respected head coaches available. So would I like the Flyers to get one? Yeah, if it's the right guy. We'll see what happens. But let's talk about DeBoer a little bit more here, Jack. Is he a fit in Philadelphia? Is he a guy that you want to bring in?
I wouldn't be against it. Who was he with? He was with San Jose, Vegas, and I believe one other team. Was it New Jersey? Way back?
Yeah. So, yeah, it looks like he coached Florida for 3 years. I got it right here. Hang on. Florida for 3 years, New Jersey for four, San Jose for 4.5, and then Vegas for 2.5.
I mean, he's highly regarded. I feel like he's reliant on a lot of talent, which we don't have. But maybe there's more than meets the eye. He rolls right in with a lot of the other names for me. He's a higher on that list, but it's not a guy that like with Trotz. I'm like, oh snap, go get him. I don't jump to that conclusion by any means.
Yeah, and so I get that. I like DeBoer, and I catch a lot of crap for that too. Maybe I just have a lot of bad takes or bad opinions, but
we do a podcast then.
I like DeBoer, and if I remember back when he was coaching the Devils, those teams were a pain in the ass to play against. He brought the Sharks to the Stanley Cup back in 2015-16. I think they lost to Pittsburgh. Lost in round one the next year, round two the next, and then conference finals with San Jose. Brought Vegas to the conference finals twice. Lost in the finals with New Jersey. So this is kind of reminding me of like a maybe an AV type guy who's been to the dance but could never quite win it kind of thing.
And then you go out and get him the superstar,
yeah,
like Eichel or Erik Karlsson, and the team falls to pieces.
Yeah.
Not that that's all on him, but it's a big hire for Fletcher. So you're considering everything.
Yeah, he's got to nail it. And so another thing with these teams is they're not necessarily young teams. They're teams with a lot of, talent, like 28, 29, 30-year-old guys who are established. You know what I mean? You look at the Flyers roster, when you think about established players, the first couple guys that come to mind for me are Hayes, Ellis, and Couturier, all injury history this year. So I don't know. We'll see. I like the guy. Do I think he's the right fit for the job now? No, I don't. Would I be upset if they brought him in? No, I don't think so.
I think that's how I feel.
Yeah, it's a name, a guy who's been around the block, but it's not really a name that, you know, perks gets you excited or anything.
Yeah.
So a bunch of other names available. So here's what I'm kind of, as we're talking about this here, Jack, and I'm probably going to hate this. As we're talking about the Flyers, and, you know, in my mind, just the organization right now overall, not necessarily a destination, right? Like we use Detroit as an example. I know Detroit, the city, sucks, but if we're talking about the franchise, they're, I think, a desirable destination. They're up and coming. They're loaded with talent. The GM's a good guy. He knows what he's doing. Eats, sleeps, breathes hockey. That's a team where you can be like, okay, I'm going to be there for 4 or 5 years because they're not expected to win next year. kind of thing. They're still building, still growing kind of deal. I'll implement my system. In 2-3 years, we're really going to get going. We're going to take off. Whereas you look at this Flyers team, Philadelphia is an okay city. But you look at the roster, you look at the organization, and as I mentioned, it's kind of like meh. So if what I think is their best chance is they need to go out and get a guy who's looking for a second chance in the NHL as a head coach, a guy who maybe in his first opportunity, things didn't necessarily pan out. Not because he was a bad coach, but because he had other things going on. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Oh, Jesus.
Off ice things. So Philadelphia might be the team where they have to – and I'm not – so Jim Montgomery is not a bad coach, not a bad guy. The more I read, the more, you know, I look up about him. He's growing on me a little bit. He's starting to make a lot of sense for me. And one of the reasons why the Flyers may not have announced a head coach yet is because Jim Montgomery is still coaching. The St. Louis Blues are in the second round of the playoffs. So it would make sense for the Flyers not to announce a coach because they actually cannot, right? So because we're all wondering, hey, what are they waiting for here? They fired Vigneault back in December. They said they were going to put the coaching search on hold and let Yo finish out the year. We're about two, maybe 3 weeks into the offseason. Nothing. Crickets as far as in the coaching front. Would you be upset with a Jim Montgomery hire?
I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying, yeah, probably. especially if, say St. Louis gets eliminated next round. And Trotz has not signed. And they announced that they hired Montgomery. I would be pissed. I would be furious. That is not an extensive coaching search, if you ask me. They should not hire this guy until, like, Stanley Cup, like until the first game of the Stanley Cup or something. I just feel like they need to do more. If they already have their guy, what about this front office tells you they know what the hell they're talking about? And I understand there's reasons to like Jim Montgomery, but again, you cannot flub this coaching hire. It is way, way too important. And if there's, and I don't mean to be disrespectful here, but if there's one city that can drive you to drink,
oh my God.
This city. I'm dead serious. Like, I mean, think about it took years off my life. That's a Fletcher comment. Like, come on. Like, I mean, high stress, high pressure. Like, and if it goes bad, oh, gee, this city, how last year went with this front office, I feel like it would be them being thinking that they're smarter than they are and that we're going to be stupid enough to believe it. Could it work? Sure. It's such a risk. It really is.
So here's a DIY question or DIK or DYK. Did you know that Jim Montgomery once played for the Philadelphia Flyers?
I did not know that.
He also played for the Philadelphia Phantoms for parts of three seasons. So he played five games for the Flyers back in 95. I'm sorry, he played two seasons for the Flyers. So he played eight games back in 1994-95, where he scored a goal and an assist in eight games. And then he played in 95-96, where he scored a goal and two assists in five games for the Flyers. He would then go on to play for the Phantoms from 1997 to the year 2000. Scoring 29 goals and 87 points in 1998 to 1999 season. So there are organizational connections with Jim Montgomery, which I had not known until now.
Even better.
Yeah. So let me get down to his coaching resume here. So he coached at the University of Denver. He had very good records there in college, which is great. I'm not really crazy for college coaches, but went on to coach the Dallas Stars, who were just eliminated from the playoffs last night by the Calgary Flames. He brought them into round two in his first year, going 43-32-7. The next season, he was let go. He went 17-11-3, and now he's been an assistant coach with the St. Louis Blues since last season. So Jim Montgomery. So not the guy that's number one on my list, Jack, but a guy that seems to be making more and more the most I don't want to say the most sense, but kind of narrowing things down on my end. And it's like, oh, this guy's starting to make a lot of sense here. Like, Flyers haven't announced a head coach. Don't know what they're waiting for. The draft is coming up. You want to bring somebody in and keep them up to and get them up to speed as fast as possible. What are they waiting for? They have all these big names available. It's like, oh, well, St. Louis is still playing. This might be, you know, if you're going to give a guy a second chance and you don't want to pay him out the ass like you would these other guys, Jim Montgomery might be the guy. Because let's not forget, Alain Vigneault is under contract for two more seasons here, $5 million apiece. So if they were, and I know they mentioned that they're going to open the checkbooks, because let's just say they hire one of these big name guys, Torch, Trotz, whoever, likely $5 million a season at least. So now you got $10 million tied up in coaches for the next 2 years. And I know they did this to themselves. But if you don't want to do that and money is an issue, Jim Montgomery might be the guy.
Oh my God. It's yeah. So now it might make sense for a certain reason, but if one of those reasons is finances, this team can F off all day. Like, are you kidding me? I can literally see Fletcher waiting. Blues are eliminated from the playoffs, but he still waits. So Trotz goes to Vegas. Tortorella decides to stay, and Tocchet decide to stay in the booth and talk about the game and intermission. And all these other guys go elsewhere. Then they announce it. It's like, oh, I see what you did there. Just to weather the storm that they know would be horrible just to get their quote-unquote guy. I mean, I don't get it. Except, I mean, I do get it, but I just think it's a horrible decision. Hiring him feels like a move that a smart GM does because you trust that GM's ability to realize what their team needs and go assess who that is and go grab that guy. Where we don't see Fletcher as that guy.
So that's going to be – so that's the interesting part for me, because during his end-of-year presser, and this is another take that I have that not a lot of people like, I actually agreed with a lot that he said. I thought that he was pretty much, dead on with what the issues were. I mean, you know, the team had a lot of injuries, like and injuries where it was kind of like, well, what can I do with this? I mean, unless he was going to start LTIR and guys early in the season, which – I was saying to do, but apparently it's not as easy. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what goes into all that. Maybe they expected Ellis to come back sooner than later, and he just never did. Kutz, we know, had a lingering back problem that he ended up getting surgery on. I mean, it was like, what were we supposed to do other than, you know, I mean, they fired the coach. What was it? 20 games in, which I thought was a mistake. It was just bad from top to bottom this year. And he talked about all those things. And to me, it sounded like he had his finger on what needed to be different heading into next season. I mean, he did it last season. He tried at least. Like, remember, we were all excited for Ellis, Atkinson, Ristolainen, whether you like the trade or not, it was something different at least on the defensive end, big physical guy can play on the power play. They didn't play him on the power play this year, but he made moves. He tried to inject life where it needed to be injected. And again, say what you want. I think he knows what needs to happen to the roster. It's a matter of, can he do it? Because obviously he's got to get rid of a guy like JVR. He's got to go find the top line player, which is easier said than done. And he might have to move a guy that he doesn't want to move in Ivan Provorov or Travis Konechny. So we'll see. Can he do it? I don't know. We're going to find out. But I think at least in Chuck's mind, he thinks he can, you know, make the necessary changes if they do hire a Jim Montgomery. Because, like, the roster's not set. Like, that's the thing. As I think about this more, if they did bring in a guy like Trotz or, toss me another name, Tortorella, I think you need to have the roster set. The roster needs to be ready to win. I like the roster more than most, but it sounds like there's going to be more turnover. I don't know. I think a guy like Montgomery, I don't know, just makes sense to me. Unfortunately,
I mean, it makes sense to me, as in this is something that Fletcher and the Flyers would do. Yeah. I understand where you're coming from, but in that same press conference, we all knew about the injuries. He is the guy who traded for an injury-prone player. Let's remember that. This was definitely something that could have been. But he also was a guy who seemed like he didn't know what direction he didn't want to go. He didn't. He wasn't committal. Like the blank check was a post-trade deadline, like press conference, the end of the year press conference. He sounded more like a, I'm not sure if we should rebuild or go for it, you know. And I'm I hope he thinks in his mind if they do decide to go for it that he can make the necessary moves. And honestly, a guy like Trotz, when Trotz first came to the Islanders just lost John Tavares. They were not a ready-made, ready-to-win roster, you know, and he made them that. I mean, which makes all the more sense. And I also think he's been here now, what, is it 3 years or 2.5 or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, three for Chuck, yeah. Crazy.
And the first thing he says, besides injuries, which it's not an excuse because it is a factor, and you look at like the most teams have lost players to injury, we're all at the bottom of the league for the most part. You know, like he still needs a star. You know, we have a blank check. We're pretty much going to go buy the best player we can because this roster just isn't doing it. And you don't do that if it's just injuries. Like, you add tweaks here and there. They have been that bad for back-to-back seasons. This season didn't fall out of the sky. Like, this is back-to-back seasons of absolute embarrassment now. You know, they didn't have a poor season. They didn't just miss the playoffs. They were dog shit. Yeah. Dog shit. And it's I get what you're saying with injuries. And
I was going to say, that's where it goes back to why. Yeah, it goes back to injuries.
What are you supposed to do? But like the year before, they had some COVID issues and some injuries. But, you know, at some point, like the team's going to have to win and there are no more excuses where we've expended them, you know. And I think hiring a out of the box or outside the box hire is very risky. Like I would be surprised. And I could, at the same time as I feel like he shouldn't go that route, at the same time as I feel like he totally could go that route. I just think Montgomery should be more of a fallback option. If you strike out on Trotz, which makes sense. If I'm Trotz, I'm probably not coming to Philly, no matter how much money you offer me, because I'm sure another team can come close enough where it's not that big of a deal. I don't even know who's number two on that list. Then maybe then it's preference. Maybe it's just Trotz, and then Montgomery is your A. Or B, rather, plan B, because you didn't think Trotz was going to be available. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't totally kill him for that. And I did read that they might not go with a name this time around. Trotz tends to trump all of that because of who he is and the shocking reality that he was cut or fired, rather. But it wouldn't. I don't think it'd be the end of the world. I'd be very shocked if they did it and it worked out, just to be honest.
Yeah. Well, let's move on here. So we've got about a minute and a half left in the episode. We're in round two of the playoffs. We'll do kind of a wildfire thing here. I'll give you the series. You give me your pick, and we'll move on to the next one. So round two, Western Conference Finals, Jack. Colorado and St. Louis, who you got?
Yeah, Colorado and six.
All right. I'm really tempted to pick St. Louis. I really like them a lot.
I thought Minnesota was going to do a lot better than they did. We had the best first round of the playoffs, I think, in NHL history. And I still have an issue with the playoff structure.
I know. It was bad. Because teams had good regular seasons and got shitty matchups. I'm looking
at it. They really did.
Dallas, Minnesota, St. Louis. Yeah, some tough ones there. Toronto, Tampa Bay. Toronto had an outstanding regular season. They get matched up with Tampa. Like, that sucks.
Two-time defending champs. Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. So, you know what? I really want to take St. Louis, but they're not 100%. I think they're still missing Torrey Krug. I don't feel confident taking Colorado over St. Louis for some reason.
It's round two. This is the kiss of death for them. I'm going to take them.
Yeah, I'm going to take them. I don't, like I said, I like Berube more than I like Bednar.
Right.
And I like St. Louis's team overall more than I like Colorado. I like certain players on Colorado. You know what? I'm talking myself into St. Louis. I'm taking St. Louis.
Just take him. Fuck it.
I'm taking him. All right, let's move on to the other matchup.
Hey, how many games?
Man, I don't know. I think I'm going to go six for St. Louis.
Okay.
All right, so the other one. Both teams had to advance through a game seven. Calgary, of course, won last night. Gaudreau scored the game winner. Edmonton advanced Saturday night. Wait, that wasn't an overtime game. That was a shutout. 2-0 shutout, was it? 3-0?
Right, yeah. So Edmonton shut them out 2-0, I believe.
So Calgary, Edmonton, who you got?
I'm going to go Edmonton, and I'm thinking six or seven. I'll just say it's seven. I mean, Calgary's look good. Gaudreau shot up some of the I don't perform in the playoff haters with a huge game seven overtime goal. What a series that was. I think Calgary came in as the better team, but Edmonton might be putting something together here. I'm not sure. I think it's going to be close. I think the Battle of Alberta is going to be great. I'm going to edge it game seven. I don't know if it'll be overtime, but I'm going to go with Edmonton.
All right. I'm going to go Calgary six. I've liked Calgary all year. I think they had a terrible matchup with Dallas. You could see after game one that just had seven games written all over it, the way Dallas was playing. They escaped. They get to play a more open team in Edmonton. I don't necessarily trust Mike Smith, and I'm going to take the only – so Calgary can't take their foot off the pedal now because they looked really good in game seven. The only thing that I'm worried about is they're like, okay, we finally got past Dallas. We're playing an Edmonton team where we know that things are going to be a little bit more opened up kind of thing. And I don't know if that works to their advantage or not, going against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. So that could be a tricky one. I'm gonna roll with Calgary for this one, though. All right, let's move on to Eastern Conference. And here's the matchups, in my opinion, are a little bit more tough. I mean, you got the Battle of Alberta, so that's going to be tough regardless. But let's go to the Battle of Florida, Jack. Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
This one could really go either way. I'm going to take Florida in seven. If Tampa had an easier first round, I'd be taking Tampa right now. But they really left it all out there. Braden Point, I don't know the extent of that injury. I don't know what's going on there. He could be back sooner than later. I don't know. Florida looked at times a little – they weren't playing their game against Washington. They looked like a young team. Ultimately, they got it done. Some of that veteran leadership, like Claude Giroux, helped them out. And Bob can be a little bit of a question mark in the playoffs. You don't know who you're going to get. That's going by his history, too, his playoff history. Ultimately, I think too much was taken out of Tampa. That Toronto team is fantastic. What a shame. But I think Florida pulls it off. I think they're the ones to eliminate them, and I think it's going to be tough.
Dude, so I hate to go the opposite because I liked Florida all year. I liked them last year. I want them to win. But you know what scares me a little bit? Sergei Bobrovsky. I think, you know, they played a lesser team in Washington, and, you know, they didn't look very good. Even the games that they won, they had to come back from, right? Mm-hmm. So the goaltending was a little suspect. They're not – so you can get by with maybe a Radko Gudas, a Gustav Forsling, guys like that on your second pair against Washington. Can they get by Tampa in a seven-game series? See, I don't know how – I'm not sure Tampa – so Tampa reminds me as one of those teams where they kind of just glide along in the regular season. And then when they get to the playoffs now, it's like, all right, now we'll turn it on. I'm wondering if, I don't know, Florida looked just, they didn't, when you watched the Florida Panthers, did you feel confident? Were you like, oh shit, like they're steamrolling? Or were you like, man, what the hell's going on here? Oh, and they ended up
winning. It was definitely like, what the hell's going on? They looked like they were playing ahead of themselves. They weren't on the same page. Like, yeah. The passes were bad. Like, they looked more skilled. They looked youthful, you know, faster. They had the stamina, but they just weren't on the same page. Like, you could tell they just hadn't had the experience. And that's where Tampa's going to trump them. They have all the experience in the world. And the only reason I give Florida a chance is because they're incredible. Like, can you imagine if we had a player like Barkov here in Philly playing with Giroux instead of Voracek? Jesus Christ. But like at the same time, one thing that can prop up a young team still trying to find their game is a rock steady goalie who they don't have.
Right.
Like, playoff Bob is a mystery. If he shot him out first game, I wouldn't be surprised. If he gave up seven goals, I wouldn't be surprised. You know what I mean? Like, and not to mention the playoffs have kind of been that way. We have seven game series where the first four games have been blowouts on each side, back and forth. 8-2, 6-1, 7-2. Like, it's just ridiculous. And the only reason I say Florida, because they do have the talent, they do have the skill. I think, and I'm saying game seven, I just think too much was taken out of Tampa in that first round. If Tampa played, I know they're not in the same division, but pretty much what Colorado did to Nashville, if that was Tampa in the first round, I think they beat Florida in six, maybe even five. You know, but like, I just feel like too much was taken out of them. I think of the injury bugs coming around. And I think Florida, maybe they're smart enough to realize their mistakes, and they almost dropped one to a farly inferior team, and I think they sneak by.
I want Florida. I want them to win. I really do. I'm going with Tampa, and I'm going to take him because of Vasilevsky. I think goaltending ends up being a difference. I know he didn't look great against Toronto.
I know. I love that.
Right? So that's going to be a fun one, though. I just want to watch fun hockey, and I think that's going to be a series where we get it. All right, so our final one, the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Rangers. Who do you got, Jack?
I'm going Hurricanes. Hurricanes in six. I'll give the Rangers some credit. I just feel like it's great to see Tony DeAngelo come back and play his old team. Shesterkin has not looked like the Shesterkin who not only was probably going to win the Vezina, but he's nominated for the Hart as well. Like, that's how good of a regular season he had. And yeah, his playoffs, it's like two completely different goalies. The defense, too. The defense has not been as strong. That team has been carried by their offense, and they're lucky they got by Pittsburgh, who put a better fight. They had to come back from 3-1. I mean, that takes its toll. Now, it's a good thing. It can give you the momentum and whatnot. But, like, when the Flyers did it, it was round two, and it was 3-0. And they were the underdogs. They were always the underdogs. The Rangers were expected to go on a playoff run here, and they came this close to being eliminated in the first round by a team that a lot of people thought were over the hill. And in Carolina played a much tougher Boston team. It went game seven, but they took care of business, and I think they'll beat the Rangers. I'll say six. I think they beat the Rangers in six. They're just so – especially if they get Frederik Andersen back. I truly believe then that'll be a huge difference maker, and I still think they win without him, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm going to take Carolina too. I don't like Shesterkin. I don't think the Rangers should have gotten past the Penguins in that series. I don't think they played very well. I think the Penguins – I think the Penguins did him favors. I don't think the Penguins looked good either. I mean, they were playing with a third-string goalie. I think if Jari was healthy and played that entire series, I think we're talking about the Penguins against Carolina. I don't like New York. I don't think they're a complete team. I'm not saying they don't belong in the playoffs. I think they're here because they're goalie. I think they showed you what happens when they don't get top-tier goaltending. Is that going to happen again? Is it going to trail over? We'll find out. I'm taking Carolina, and I'll go six games, maybe even five, but let's go six just to be safe. So we did have a comment here. I did miss it. I want to respond real quick because he's not on Twitter anymore, from our buddy Dave Gormley. James.
Oh, no.
How did you not know Jim Montgomery was a Flyer? Hope you're well, buddy. Good show. Thanks, Dave. Yeah, didn't know.
Probably won the Calder Cup in 97, and I was there, and I didn't know.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, so Flyer connections.
You say those Phantoms teams. It is Neil Little, Peter White, and Frank the Animal. Nobody else.
I know. Yeah, maybe we should get Frank on. Maybe you can talk about Jim Montgomery a little bit.
Yeah, maybe he can curse up a storm and just say things that scare us.
All right, so with that, why don't we wrap up the episode? Before we do our little wrap up here, I do want to put out – hang on, I just deleted it. So – there's going to be a song that's played at the end of our episode. It's not going to be the usual outro song. It's going to be from our buddy's band up in North Jersey. They're an indie rock band based out of New Jersey. Make sure you check them out. They have a new video. It's called The Motions. It's out just wherever you watch your music videos, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. They're called Gin War. Make sure you check them out. They do very good stuff. So for Jack, I'm Jim. That's going to do it for the episode, boys and girls. Thanks for hanging out with us. As always, make sure you go check out the episode of HW at Night with Dave Leonard featuring Jim Jackson. Great stuff, as always. Next time you catch us live, should be next week. So drink your green stuff, take your vitamins, and enjoy the rest of your night. We'll be right back.
About for a long time.